You seem to find this all very amusing.
I might. If we weren't on our way to help some suffering and dying humans who...
Your species is always suffering and dying. When this rescue is completed, I am prepared to listen carefully to whatever proposal you wish to make, and subject to its being acceptable. Subject to your own foolish human values? Oh, come, Picard, why do you distrust me so?
Why? At our first meeting, you seized my vessel. You condemned all humans as savages. And on that charge, you tried us in a post-atomic 21st century court of horrors where you attacked my people. You again seized my vessel.
And that angered you, did it? Seized my vessel, seized my vessel.
You interfered with our Farpoint mission. You threatened to convict us as ignorant savages. If, while dealing with a powerful and complex life form, we made the slightest mistake, and when that didn't happen...
The Q became interested in you. Does no one here understand your incredible good fortune? Seized my vessel. These are the complaints of a closed mind, too accustomed to military privileges. But you, Riker, and I remember you well, what do you make of my offer?
We don't have time for these games.
Games? Did someone say games? And perchance, for interest's sake, a deadly game? To the game.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, good
can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, you're coming through clear. That's fine.
Perfect.
So thank you so much for being on. I appreciate you making some time for us.
Of course.
Maybe David will be able to make it. I'm not sure. If he does, he'll be joining us later. But today it's just me and Alan. So, again, thanks for coming on. It's going to be really fun, I think.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for asking me. It's a pleasure to share time with you guys. I'm a fan of your show, so it's awesome to be part of the conversation now, not just listening.
Well, I guess starting off real quick, I guess I'd like to know what you thought about the Sync Summit, because I think I'm trying to congeal as many perspectives as I can on the event. And you went. I don't know how long you stayed, but what did you think of it?
I was there for the whole time. It was awesome. It was amazing. I think, you know, I mean, the things that were the most fun to walk away with were just sort of getting to meet everyone in real life. And like all the little conversations that sort of erupted in between presentations were just so engaging and so much fun. I had some personal syncs like leading up to getting there. And the entire time that we were there was really sort of, for me, had like that air of sort of magic around it, very much that same air that, I don't know if you guys have read any of my blog posts, but I started a blog right after my last vacation because I had this sort of like wave of three really syncy days that were awesome. And so it was very much that same kind of feeling and going down there.
Yeah, I read the three. You were in Spain, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
I was the entire trip. You're in Spain, or you're in Oslo, or what was going on?
No, we took a 7-week trip, which was just so unbelievably amazing and indulgent. So we spent, my husband's, Andy's from Norway originally, so we spent a couple weeks there visiting his family and traveling around. And then we also were in France and Sweden and Copenhagen and Belgium. And we were in New York for a few days going over, and we were in Spain. So we were kind of flying the long distances and then doing little mini road trips.
And always record 90 or something, I think, fit into
that? Yes! Yeah. So, okay. So I think I started telling this story to Doug when he had me on 42 minutes, but I was so nervous about that conversation.
Don't blame yourself. I listened to that while I was on my own road trip, and I was like, why did he interrupt her? So now I'm interrupting you to say that you were interrupted, and you should just tell your story. Don't let anyone else do it.
No, it's okay. I was actually going to tell you guys that you should have a little like a little bell that you ring when I start getting too tangential, because that's part of the problem is that I can never go in a straight line to the end of my story because things pop up and I get distracted by shiny new thoughts.
That's why you'll fit in just perfectly here, because that's how we roll.
Exactly. That's why I'm so excited to be here, because as far as I understand, there's no time limit. I can ramble forever.
Yeah, just let us know when you feel like you're getting burned out, or either of us are getting burned out. We'll come to a organic stopping point.
Perfect. So the very first thing, New York was amazing. It was the first place we stopped before heading over to Oslo. And as we got on the plane to fly over, we were flying on one of the new Norwegian airline planes, which are called the Dreamliners. And they're these huge, very space-agey type of planes. Like, everything is automated. The people, like the flight attendants and stuff, don't come up and down the aisles unless you request them. And it's all sort of like on a screen in front of you. The toilets are robotic, like really weird. And the lighting all across the top of the hull is rainbow colored. So you feel like you're in this weird plane disco. It's very strange. So automatically I was, you know, and being in planes for me is so much fun because it's a total isolation chamber in a sense. And all you really have to do is either read or watch movies back to back to back, especially those long flights, which is what I did, instead of sleeping.
Did anyway, you hallucinate in the deprivation chamber?
Maybe.
I've never been in one, but I've heard you can have some pretty intense hallucinations.
No, you know, I haven't. And it's one of the things that I'd actually like to do soon this year. I think we have some here in Vancouver, and I would totally love to give that a try.
Well, I think you can enter like the shamanic experience in a lot of different ways, and that seems to be one of the pathways to visions and whatnot, or revelatory experience, however you want to define it, I guess. But anyway, go on with your story. I just thought it was an interesting tangent.
No, that I completely agree. And actually, last night we had a friend over who I haven't seen in a long time, and she, we were talking a lot about shamanic experience and all that kind of stuff. And she was, we were talking about DMT and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not a drug culture person. I'm actually not like a festival outside kind of person at all. I'm very much a hermit crab. So anyway, I was sharing with her my experiences this year in particular. It feels like something has kind of unlocked in my brain, and my dreams are getting a bit more visionary. And then I sort of have been thinking about the deprivation chambers and stuff. So I think maybe it's time to dip my toe in. I think that'd be a really fun experiment. Anyway, so I get on the plane, and the in-flight magazine has on the cover the DeLorean, and it's an article about like the unlikely comeback of the DeLorean or whatever. And I was really excited because Back to the Future, of course, was one of my very first favorite movies, being a child of the 80s. And so I flipped open to find the article, and it started on page 42, and I got, you know, like ecstatic, like hit my husband over the head with it, like, look at this. This is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about synchronicity, because he likes to make fun of me and say that I read into stuff too much. So anyway, that was kind of awesome because, as I said on the show, it was like I was kind of thinking about these future human visionary encounter dreams that I've been having, and then also recently obsessed with Transformers, which I was classifying the DeLorean as a Transformer, and then 42, which was my first major sort of surreal sync. Like, after I read the sync books and stuff, that was sort of the thing that broke my brain. It was started following me around everywhere and all that kind of stuff. So that was really fun. And then when we were actually in Norway, it was just the entire, I mean, man, I'm not, I don't know. I'm not a type, I've never believed in God. Like, I've never sort of been the person to be like, there are spirit fairies here. But in the Neil Gaiman American Gods kind of sense, like, I feel the veil between the old pagan gods in that country and the working reality is very thin, It was just so dreamy the entire time I was there. And it was like I found like a new species of crow. We were part of our road trip. We were driving through to get to Sweden, and we stopped in Hell, Norway. There's an actual town called Hell, and we stopped there just for lunch. And we got out of the car, and it was just like flocks of these black birds with gray feathers on their chest and ice blue eyes were just kind of following us. And like every time I was sort of left alone, like Andy would go in and get juice or sandwiches or whatever, they would just like fly and like sit on the railing and just stare at me. And I was like, okay, I feel a little bit like I'm being watched here. What's going on? And like would leave me feathers and stuff. And I don't know, it was very nature. It was very interactive and touchy-feely with you there. Maybe because there's so much of it and it's majestic and super beautiful. I don't know. So then, because I was in Europe, sorry, what were you going to say, John?
Well, I heard birds, yeah, they have a lot of symbolic meaning, but even in like day-to-day experience and people observing them, they seem to show up at certain moments in people's lives. A lot of times associated with death, strangely, but other times not so much, just like transformative stuff. Mike Cleland, yeah. And Owl, and other
yes.
folks.
Yes, okay. That, so. That's remind me of that story, because that was one of my sinks coming down to Olympia. But back to Norway, I don't know. I've never really had like a personal affinity with birds. I once conjured a rat out of nowhere, which was really, really one of my most favorite stories from last year. It was like I was riding a creative high or whatever, and slightly. Can I tell this story? I'm being really tangential.
You can do whatever you like.
Okay. So the rat story is just that, like, Andy and I made this music video together, and I was coming off of the creative high of that. And he often has to venture out into the real world more often than I do for things like groceries and running errands and things. So he always has really awesome animal experiences, and I always feel really jealous that I never get to see any. So I was on a run late at night, and I stopped and I was just like, I want to see a rat like right in front of my path right now, like a proper rat. And nothing happened, of course. And I was like, oh man, my magical powers aren't as strong as I think they are. And so I'm walking home listening to my earbuds, and then I get this like creeping feeling that was like, take your earbuds out. You should be aware of your surroundings. First of all, you're walking alone at night in the middle of the night. You should just be aware of what's going on. And so the second I take out my earbuds, I hear this rustling, and I look to the left, and sure enough, this little white belly is climbing a fence, and like the chain link fence, and then stops right at the top and just stares at me. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And it was so like, I had never seen a rat like it before. It was like pink tail, white belly, gray back, and like huge Mickey Mouse ears and big black eyes. Not like the normal Norwegian brown rats or whatever. And then it was almost domesticated. Like I was sure it was someone's gerbil or something that had gotten loose, because it was just sitting there staring at me and let me take a bunch of pictures of it and everything. But it was really
okay,
magical.
Is that anyway. What motivated the Lady Gaga hat, or what was that? I noticed a rat. It seemed like a rat. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, it is. That happened in 2009. So that was like right after I graduated. This rat manifestation happened last year. But the Lady Gaga thing was there's this fashion photographer called Nick Knight, who is absolutely amazing, does the most dreamy, surreal stuff. So she was pairing up with him to do a video contest, and it was during her Monster Ball tour. And so it was kind of like a darker period for her aesthetically, which is really amazing. And I was fully getting into it. I have been a goth child for life. So I was really loving all her like sort of more macabre, morbid sensibilities that were coming out. And anyway, the video contest was like, do a short video of your interpretation of the apocalypse or whatever that would be. And I love that word so much. It's like, it's such like, it's a really beautiful word, and the literal definition is a veil lifted. And I just think that's super poetic because I also love veils and veiling in actual costumes. So I decided to make these Mickey Mouse ears that were basically just like a veil. And I hand cut all these little skulls and dipped them in plastic and let it hang dry so they looked all drippy and melty, and then molded them all together into the mouse ears and put some black lace on it. And that was that. And my friend and I got together and did a short little video, like a fashion inspired video, with them, which I think I still have somewhere. And and then I was going to her concert a couple nights later, so I just decided to take it with me and see if I could get it to her. And in a lovely string of magical synchronicity, as things happen, I had no plan. I just showed up at the actual concert with the hat on a styrofoam head and just sort of went for the first security guard I saw and was like, hey, I don't really need to meet her or anything, but is there any way that you could get this back to her? And the guy was like, no, you have to talk to, why don't you go talk to the lady that's at the door? And I was like, the lady taking tickets? That seems like she'd be a little too busy or whatever. But sure enough, so I walk straight through and I'm all dressed up. I'm wearing like a white version of the same hat that I'm holding and like a skeleton onesie, whatever. So I'm going through the crowd and like everyone's just kind of like parting. And this lady at the door was so cute. She must have been like 70 or something. And just so awestruck by everyone all dressed up in costume. And she, of course, locks eyes with me right away. And she's like, oh my. And like completely forgets to like take the people's tickets at the door. And she's like, you look wonderful. What is this that you have in your hand? Is that for Gaga? And I was like, yes, funny you should ask. It is. Do you have any way of getting this to her? And she's like, no, you need to talk to the house manager, but she's really busy right now. And then right at that moment, the house manager walked out from the door right behind her, like right in that second. And then she goes, oh, here she is. And then she like turned to me right to her and she's like, here, talk to her. She'll do it. And then sure enough, I did. I was like, yeah, I'm not looking to get backstage or anything, but I made this and it'd be lovely if you could get it to her. And so she's like, yeah, sure, no problem. And I was like, wow, that was really easy. And then actually she was doing three nights in a row. And so we left New York the next day or whatever. And as I was the following morning, as I was sort of checking my email and stuff, I had a whole bunch of excited messages from like stylist friends and stuff. And they were like, congratulations. And my Facebook page was like blowing up. And I was like, what's going on? One of my friends who was in the crowd actually like took this really cute, like shaky cam style video of Gaga when she wore the ears that I made for her and came out and performed Speechless in them. But she actually like stopped and made a point to thank me and like told everyone in the audience to give me like a big round of applause. And it was just the most amazing, gracious thing ever. I was not expecting that at all, but I mean, Gaga's she's amazing to her fans, obviously.
Did you send a note back with them? Is that how she knew you sent them, or did she anonymously thank the creator? What did you do?
I had three of my business cards attached as sort of like a tag on it, and I had written just like a little like a personal note of thank you and just saying that, you know, what she's doing is inspiring and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, she just took time to thank me. It was really, really beautiful. It was awesome because it was 2009 and I graduated in 2008 and just sort of was starting my career here. So it got me a lot of recognition, which was nice.
One of the models that was wearing it, I don't think it was Lady Gaga, but it was either a different one or the same one, but it reminded me of the Donnie Darko rabbit, only mm-hmm, with like mm-hmm. Mickey Mouse ears.
Yes, thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
It is a compliment.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a really fun piece. I wish that I need to make more time in my schedule to just do fun stuff like that, because you know, as you slip into your career, time for extracurricular activity kind of goes by the wayside. But I'm sort of allowing myself the space now to just create things that come into my head again, because I feel like it's necessary and it's fun, and I always get the best sort of experiences out of it.
Yeah, you have to take some tangents now and then, or get off the path. I mean, you get into routines, and I guess you could, they're not even ruts. They're just like habits, I guess. And
yeah. And one of the one of the things that's hard about making a career out of what is also your artistic outlet is that it sort of sucks the life out of you sometimes, which, you know, is amazing. And I'm super grateful for everything that I have and that I do and the people that ask me to work for them. But, you know, it's like, yeah, I was saying that to Doug too. It's like everything that I work on in terms of costuming, it is wildly creative and fun, but it is also like an entire reflection of the person that I'm working with, sort of filtered through my aesthetic and my skill set. You know, and because you work for yourself, you can't ever say no to jobs. That's just not a thing you should do. So at least that's what my mentality has been in the past. So, you know, the past 4 years have been like driving hard, just like, yes, take everything, do everything. And so all of that kind of free time to just kind of breathe and make fun, silly hats and dress up for concerts and all of that stuff that was basically the foundation of my passion that I made into a career kind of ends up going by the wayside. And I miss it. Like, I miss being able to just, you know, whatever, take a couple days and just make myself things. It's cute. My clients are looking out for me too. Every once in a while, they'll just be like, when was the last time you made something for yourself?
Yeah, if I can just sort of jump in there, it's with a lot of sympathy that I hear you talk about this, because I've been in a very similar place, that sort of everything all the time, unable to say no and all that sort of stuff. And what I wanted to do most of all when John asked me if I could be here tonight was sort of say sorry to you for when I saw you and met you at the Olympia Sing Summit. Was I felt overwhelmed to stop and have a conversation with anybody until Sunday, and we finally got a chance to talk, and by that point I was so burnt out that I didn't feel like I really was able to connect and all that sort of stuff. And just I'm glad obviously we had this opportunity again, but
Alan, no apology is necessary. I sensed that. I know what it's like to try to produce an event yeah, no, not at all. It's like, not at all. It's awesome to be here with you now, like you said. So it's really exciting. And we have our whole lives ahead of us now to be friends.
Exactly,
so.
Right. Like, you know, you started,
I'm not worried.
Yeah, you started this off by sort of saying, like, you listened to the show, but now you get to be a part of it. And that's really what we've been trying to do here. And, you know, I think something that Sync is really unique in this respect is that there's no, something I've really tried to stress this over and over again, there's no Sync expert. You know, there might be people who've researched one thing more than someone else, you know, someone who knows Kabbalah better, someone who knows Tarot better, someone who knows quantum physics better, etc., etc., etc. But there's no expert on synchronicity. It's just someone who either gets it, like once your mind is like, does that make sense to you? And if it does, you're basically on the same playing field as everyone else. And
that was one of the really beautiful lessons that I learned at being at the summit with everyone was, I completely agree with you. It is just sort of like a shift in perception. So the fact that we all have different, yeah, like I kind of think of it like a kaleidoscope, right? So the fact that we all have different sort of colors that we're shining through is essential in creating the beauty of the overall experience of engaging in synchronicity. And I was like, yeah, it was great for me personally to be there with everyone and listening, because I was sort of wary of, like, am I ever going to be able to like talk on the same level as Alan and David? And like, would that be, is that even something that I need to worry about? Which of course is not the case, but is still entirely meaningful and entertaining to listen to. But it was great to be with everyone.
I hope
just
we
to
were,
kind of feel
I,
you.
I hope
just,
we were schmoey enough that fear was quickly dissipated.
No, you're not schmoey at all. I love you guys. I came back from Olympia with like the hardest crushes on everyone that I met and engaged with there, because everyone was just so lovely. And I think that, and just like awake, like conscious and thinking and engaged and totally inspired and running off of passion, which is just the most amazing. I mean, that's what you hope communities are built on. So it was really fun. But yeah, for me, it was just kind of like, because, you know, I started my blog as like a personal sync diary, and I felt like it was, like I was already sort of journaling and like recording my synchronicities every day and trying to keep track of them. And then every once in a while, if I had something really powerful, I would sort of like post it as like a synchro misty moment. And then the idea, like via Instagram or whatever. And then the idea to sort of maybe collect it all in a blog and maybe expand on some stories came after I had those really dreamy 3 days in a row in Norway, where it was just like, I don't know, it wasn't even really all that profound as an but it was like a subtle example of the way that I experience and feel synchronicity, like in the everyday life way of things, not just in an analytical sense, which I also really enjoy and hope to engage with a little bit, especially with my obsession with Transformers. And I'm a huge Trekkie, and I'm following there's a really awesome thought that came to me right before the Sync Summit, which is a whole nother thing. But yeah, so I was like, it's important. And even like being a part of an artistic member of the burlesque community, what's so lovely about being surrounded by artists all the time doing their thing is that you really do realize the value of individual stories and sharing no matter what. Like, it's important to just voice up. So I sort of was taking my own advice and was like, well, even if it's not the most applicable, whatever, maybe someone will read it and be like, oh, that's what synchronicity is. Hey, I feel that too. Or I can pay attention to that too, which was sort of, you know, what was so like mind-bending for me about reading the collection of essays in both the sync books was that I had already kind of been living my life that way, and I always just referred to it as something else. I just didn't know that we were labeling it synchronicity. You know, I just didn't know that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
So,
you know, McKenna talked about that a bit. He said, don't spectate, but like live and experience. He said, direct experience is what is the best education. So, in that sense,
I love that you just said McKenna, yeah, because I've just now started listening I've never really got into his stuff before, and I recently found him. So
it's dense, and it's like he has a whole different way of speaking. So it's like, you know, I haven't listened to him in a while, but I got his message and I downloaded it, and so I haven't listened to him or read him in a while. But you know, he's still a big influence on how I think and how I approach the subjects. So he was very integrative, and so to understand him on that level is to like already be educated by him. So all this like speculation about if he was like CIA trained or whatever, that like drives me insane, because when you really analyze the framework of his ideas, you can argue with the particulars. Like, I don't agree with him on artificial intelligence, but who cares? I don't think he's a fucking CIA plant. So
let's take it there. Artificial intelligence, Transformers. I need to know. I need to know. I have a very specific question that I've been dying to ask you. There is a transformer that transforms into. Is there a transformer that transforms into a Volkswagen Beetle?
Yes, that's Bumblebee. Okay. He's my favorite besides Optimus.
So it's a
or Goldbug.
So he turns into a bug, right? I want to know if no one has done it before. Are you with me? I want to do an adaptation of Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis, where instead of turning into a bug, he turns into a transformer car bug.
Yes. You ask as if you don't already know the answer.
Has it been done? Oh, no.
No, I don't think it. No, it hasn't been done, but you asked, are you in it with me?
Yeah.
The answer is undeniably yes. That would be amazing.
It just sounds like it needs to happen.
Yes, it does. We can talk about Transformers, but I was just going to say to John's point, like never in the history of human existence has one person ever had the totality of the answer, right? So it's just, it's funny when people discount aspects of thought.
Right.
It's like you can, like, I'm willing to listen through like hours of junk to find one tiny little speck of gold. Like, that's worth it for me. That's the whole process of searching and learning, and is not being afraid to look in any direction to find value in it.
Yeah. And of course, and you know, I'm like alluding to Jan Ervin a little bit, but I really like Jan Ervin's work, and he does all kinds of stuff with psychedelics that I think is important historically speaking. And even if it's some of it's wrong, I mean, I really like a lot about him. So I think his work's important. I say, hey, go read his stuff. It's like, but I think we're allowed to have disagreements and like still like adopt each other's ideas and be in that space. But I don't think a lot of people function that way. So I don't know. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree, because you miss out on a lot of stuff. It's like, that's the whole thing with judgment or prejudgment and doing away with it, is that you're limiting your scope of experience so much by placing any judgment on anything before you actually experience it.
Yeah, and you spoke earlier, like in our conversation before the show, but also you alluded to it after. It's like you function as a liaison in between these parts of your life, and at the same time, you can't help but see the bleed through at some point, and it start, but you can function on many different levels, and like there's things you like about everything, that but also things you don't like, and so that's why you function in different spheres, you know.
Exactly. I mean, you're never going to be happy if you're constantly looking for just the one thing that's going to satisfy you. That's never going to happen. You have to diversify. Transformers. Okay, guess what I did today? I finally finished the original series. I watched every single episode now, which I'm excited. It's like, you know, man, everyone who has heard me over the last month, and there were a few people at the Sync Summit who, of course, I was talking to about this, and I think had sort of a remembrance of the original series from their childhood. Maybe they didn't watch it recently. Anyway, couple of people that I was talking to about how upset I was about Optimus Prime dying in the original cartoon, but of course he comes back in the final episodes, and I was like, everyone is a jerk face. Like, you've been letting me sit here thinking he's dead the whole time. He came back.
You couldn't ruin it for you.
Yeah, that's what Andy said, and I don't buy that for one second. Like, we're supposed to be friends. You're not supposed to let me suffer. You could have hinted at it at least.
Well, that's good. That's good to know that you would prefer it. See, I'm the opposite. I would want to be surprised.
No, I'm horrible about surprises. Okay. I want to know now. Tell me now. I want to know. Why wait? But okay. So, I just like the thing about. Okay, so leading up to Sync Summit, let's go back there. So. I just got home from my 7-week epic trip. I started my blog based on the experience I had, which was sort of instigated by listening. I saw poster art for episode 90 with the DeLorean on the cover, and I was really excited because I had just seen the magazine article, and I was like, I can't wait to listen to this episode. But I've been traveling for a bunch of time, and finally got some hours to sit down, and of course I was like, okay, I'm gonna listen, like I have to listen, I feel so out of touch. And then it was like I didn't even get through the whole episode, and you guys started talking about Supertramp and like Rudy as a character or something, and Andy came in and was like, hey, you'll never guess who I got off the phone with. It was my friend Rudy. And so it's like that was just the starting point that kind of sent me on this trip. But anyway, so that was a really awesome, strong experience. And then I got home, and it was just like a couple days later, like I think only 4 days later, that I was on 42 Minutes. And Doug and I, like, we chatted for a bit afterwards, and I told him that I had made up my mind that I was definitely going to come down to Olympia. I just wasn't sure because I was supposed to be working as soon as I got home. I was like, I don't know if I can take another weekend off. But as I explained to him, I rarely have the thing that the kids nowadays called FOMO, which is fear of missing out. I rarely ever have that. But especially because Olympia is only 5 hours south of me, I kind of was like, I'm going to have the worst fear of missing out if I don't make the trip. So I decided to go. And then we were chatting a little bit and he was like, so you're going to, like, you just got picked to be the magician's assistant. I guarantee you, if you think of a question and ask for Radio 8-Ball, like, that'll be a fun thing for you. And I was like, oh man, but then I have to think of a question. And part of, I think I was talking to John a little bit about this, is like part of my sort of process over the last year has been like a radical non-questioning of anything. Like, no goal setting, no question making, just being and standing still and breathing in a metaphorical sense, just to kind of see what I'm attracting just naturally by my energy. So this whole past year, I've just been like, no, I'm not gonna like question anything. And then I got really like, oh no, I want to participate, so I have to think of a question. And the first thing that came to mind was, what is the quintessence? Because there are the characters that create the Transformers. Well, they created robots, and then the robots evolved through, they just evolved their own intelligence, and then became the Transformers. So anyway, the creatures that created the robots and Cybertron are called the Quintessons, and they are these five-faced creatures, which is really awesome because, you know, quintessence is like the fifth element, essentially. Like, the definition is like there's earth, wind, water, fire, and then sort of quintessence is like the thing that is latent in all living things. So I guess you could call that consciousness.
It's the ether, too. They call it the ether, the 19th, 20th century physics. But right. It's the same essence. Yeah.
So I was like, that's not a coincidence. And obviously Transformers is sci-fi and stuff, so I would assume that people would be knowledgeable about things like that, and they didn't call them quintessence for no reason. So with the five faces and everything, right? But then the other thought that I was... So I've been... Because Doug asked me on the show, like, what's your thing with Transformers? And because it's so new, I haven't been able to talk eloquently about it at all, because I'm still kind of piecing things together in my mind. Like, why do I love this so much? So I wrote down on a sticky note and put it right on my sewing machine wall, along with all my to-do lists, like big letters, what is the quintessence? And intended it to be my Radio 8-Ball question. But of course, because I don't know, synchronicity happens so quickly and like instantaneously for me, it was like I was getting all the answers within immediately writing it down. So the other thought that I was sort of bouncing around and playing with was that I was wondering about Star Trek Next Generation, and I for some reason couldn't remember what the paradox was that Captain Picard had to sort of solve in the end that saves humanity, because the whole like red line of that show is that humanity is on trial for just being basically barbaric and not able to sort of think outside limited means. And the species that puts them on trial is called the Q, and they're called the Q Continuum. And I need to research this, but I think there's only like four or five of them. That would be really perfect and amazing. But anyway, I had this whole idea because the Q are these interdimensional matter into energy type of species. So they're nearly omnipotent and like all powerful and all knowing. So and they kind of just serve, like, the Q character serves as like this trickster role throughout the whole show. Like, he always just pops in to fuck with Picard and everyone, or at least it seems that way. But it was kind of bugging me because I was like, I don't understand why he would bother messing with people if he just thinks they're as stupid as rats or whatever. Like, why is that the case? And then I was thinking about Picard as sort of the, you know, symbol of all humanity or people, and P literally comes right before Q in the alphabet, and the thought kind of gelled in my head. I was like, wait a second, it's because humans evolve into Q, into these interdimensional beings that don't have barriers, or at least that's the potential. Like, that's the only reason in my mind that Q would even bother. Because the final episode is all about Picard in three different timelines, so the past, present, and future, and he has to... It was really interesting because I had a dream along these same lines. So in all sort of timelines, he has to reconcile this problem. It's the same problem in each timeline, and he finally is able to wrap his brain around the fact that he's time traveling. And that this sort of anomaly that they investigated at the beginning of the show, they're causing the destruction of the anomaly by investigating it. And the anomaly turns out to be the first proteins, like, sort of fusing together and, like, creating all of life on Earth or whatever. So I don't know. It was just some paradox thing that was going on. And so I was thinking about Q and interdimensional beings, and then also all the things with the Transformers going on and the Quintessence. And then I woke up the next morning and I was supposed to get to work and start sewing, but instead I jumped on the computer and started jumping around from thought to thought, and it led me to this article in Vice magazine about DMT, the spirit molecule, which I think they were doing like a review of the film, and I'd actually seen the film like a year ago or something like that, but didn't really think twice about it, or I guess maybe hadn't remembered. And anyway, as it's going on, it starts talking about, you know, Terrence McKenna and all these things, and then I pulled up a bunch of Terrence McKenna's lectures, and sure as shit, like, you know, one of the first things he says is like, DMT is the quintessence. And I was doing dishes, and I almost, like, dropped the glass that I was holding and washing. I was like, what is going on? This question-answer thing is happening so fast. I love it.
Sorry, on the ride after, my road trip continued after Olympia, and I kept finding myself thinking about Terrence McKenna's Time Wave Zero, which people, you know, will sort of say, well, the world didn't come to an end in 2012, which wasn't at all what you're talking about, but it was sort of, quickening, right? And it seems like when you say the fact that you can think of something and then it would happen almost instantaneously, to me it's this sort of moving towards an instant karma, moving towards something like that, where it's definitely an increased pace, and I don't know if that's across the board, or if that's a few people paying attention, or if that's all in my mind. But
I sometimes feel it's like an event horizon that's happened.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's exactly what you just talked about. This sort of simultaneous experience of feeling like we're not moving fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
Towards all these things that we can conceptualize, but at the very same time having, at least for those of us that are sort of aware of synchronicity in the way that we are, having these very instantaneous experiences, you know?
So I need to ask you a specific context question here, because...
Okay, yes, but can I tell you just like the last little bit of that Terrence McKenna thought was just... So he said DMT, spirit molecule, is the quintessence. And I was like, yes, that's awesome. And then I was sitting here glued to the seat, just like watching the screen of my computer. And he goes on to talk about, because I've never done DMT before or anything. And then he goes on to talk about his actual experience in which he's engaging with these self-transforming machine elves. Just on the other side. And I was like on the other side of reality. Or what I really loved is that he was explaining it as if, like, as compared to other psychedelic drugs, as if it's not that you're hallucinating. It's quite literally like the material walls of reality have kind of collapsed and you're seeing things on a more energetic level. And I'm assuming that all of the imagery, like the self-transforming machine elves or the crocodiles or whatever it is that people experience when they go there, is just sort of like the only way your brain has to deal with it. I don't know if it's literal. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like the kind of like the concept of God or death. Like, you can't really experience it until you're actually in it, if that makes any sense. So, but I don't know, right. But it trips me out that people have a similar experience. Like, you know, when they were doing the, like the lab tests for like DMT to classify it as a drug or whatever, they were saying that people were reporting like the same experiences with these self-transforming machine elves. Like it was a common thing. And I don't know, that tripped me out so bad. And I was like, all of a sudden, my Transformers obsession makes so much more sense to me. We have the quintessence and the self-transforming machine elves all in one cartoon. No wonder I love it, especially since I've been thinking about dipping into like lucid dreaming and sort of sensory deprivation, hallucinatory experiences like we were just talking about. Like that's sort of my personal, like where I've just been going. So it was really, really fun. It was a fun revelation for me. I was very happy with that answer.
Yeah, no, the idea of the machine as the transformer, and okay, it makes a lot more sense with you explaining it all in a larger context and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Not that you didn't explain it well in the blog post, but it's always something. I think only 20% or something of someone's actual ideas come forth in writing. It's in speaking with them that you get like the majority of it, or at least a better understanding than 20%.
Yeah, so, and I mean,
conversations are always interesting. Yeah,
yeah, I completely agree. I didn't even like. I mean, that whole revelation about the Transformers thing is so recent. Like, this happened in the last 3 weeks, so I wasn't even aware of that when I was writing about like my Bumblebee 22 thing in that blog post. Like, that was still like I hadn't wrapped my head around it. It was just I knew that there was something in it that was kind of pulling me in.
Yeah.
And Bumblebee in particular, I mean, after the Sync Summit, one of the things that David and Violator Hellspawn were talking a lot about was that they were both sort of reading Jung on the plane over, and I think you guys even on the show recently were talking about the Beatles as like a time transform kind of sync or something like that, or like the sound of Beetle wings. And I remember you're talking about like William S. Burroughs and Beetle sinks. And then, yeah, so I was like, Bumblebee definitely comes into play there. It must. He turns into a Volkswagen Beetle. And then his second generation, like what he gets renamed, because they all sort of get like reinvented, his second name is Goldbug.
Right, which it would be like the alchemical transformation, right?
Right. Yes. Exactly. Transformers is so good, you guys. You need to watch it.
So I haven't seen it, and this is why I need to ask you a question, because while you're talking, I did a Google image search for Transformers Quintessence so that I would know, oh, did I recognize, because I did watch the cartoon when I was younger, and I'm like, maybe I would recognize it. Now, what just Google image search Transformers Quintessence. Everything that's coming up is that they're like, it's this five, as you say, a five-faced kind of egg thing, and it's a it's a judge, and obviously in Star Trek, Q
was the judge.
And there's even one, I mean, I don't know if everyone gets the same Google image results, but like about seven lines down, there's an image here, it just says Q's judge, and it's the it's the quintessence judge and all this sort of stuff. And what I kind of pops into my mind is you talked about the word apocalypse really meaning an unveiling, right?
Yeah.
We have Terrence McKenna with his self-transforming machine elves who
everyone
associates with an end of the world. But then we also have this idea of a judgment day. And then sort of all these...
But do you... Sorry to interrupt you for a second. When you say end of the world, do you mean... literally, or do you mean just like end of the sort of virtual reality, if you want to compare reality to virtual reality, like hitting the wall?
I have never heard Terrence McKenna once suggest that the world would end in 2012, but I'm saying people on a mainstream level, his ideas got kind of assimilated into that whole 2012 end of the world meme, right?
Gotcha.
And so I'm sort of like, in a sync sort of thinking, is like, you can't, you can't mention Time Wave Zero without, unfortunately, without it being sort of associated with those, that mainstream idea that went around. That
Right. I mean, people are way too literal. Like, always.
Can I ask, actually, wasn't it Michael Bay who made that 2012 movie? Isn't he the same guy who made Transformers, the guy who did the 2012 movie?
I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Michael Bay, which was what my reluctance to seeing the new films in the first place was.
It's
but
Roland,
yes,
it's Roland Emmerich. Sorry. Okay, no. It's just a similar type, like, big CGI thing. But, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, sorry,
I guess
I'm just saying, like, what I've come to see with all this stuff is you might get the Apocalypse, Judgment Day, Time Wave Zero, 2012, all these sort of things kind of mushed together, right? But it's, of course, you could look at it as something scary, like a, you know, an end of the world, or you can look at it as something transformative,
right?
Quite literally transformative, to say this is a moment of unveiling, of transformation and progress, etc., etc. So I think this is awesome. Like, it's, I can see this thread very, very clearly from what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's this is what's so much fun and why I'm so overwhelmed with finding synchronicity now, is because it was just this perfect sort of way to start analyzing all the things that I've ever been attracted to in my life and why. And it kind of seemed like this culminate, like things were all literally, you know, synced together. It's just I wasn't seeing the connections, and now I am, and piece by piece it's really, really fun. And again, there's that lesson of prejudgment, or about being judgmental, because, you know, like when I want to sit down and watch a movie, it's not a big blockbuster. Like I you know, I said that before. It was like when Andy suggested going to the theater to see it, I was like, you couldn't pay me to go see a Michael Bay film. I don't really want to do that. But then, you know, once I did, I ended up walking away from it with this inkling, like that tiny intuition that's like, wait, there's something more here. And it was just another piece of my personal journey, my personal clue. And if I had never been open to that, then I would have missed it. And it's such a beautiful, playful, and I love the original cartoons. I mean, I was talking to Patrick Sveck about the fact that the first three Transformers movies by Michael Bay, there were just moments in them that kind of tickled my sink fancy. And one moment in particular, which I felt was there like specifically for me to find, like even people with a sync mind watching it probably maybe wouldn't have put it together. And it was the CIA director holding the Hermes Birkin bag in emerald green. And I like knew just enough about like Hermes Trismegistus and stuff to know about the emerald green tablets and the 42 principles of life or whatever. And it was a fashion thing. I was like, wait a second, nobody else would know that's an Hermes bag. Like, but me, it was for me. That was my clue. I was so excited about it.
That's awesome.
I know, right? I was like, that was a misty synchronicity. Like I found that clue. It was purposely put there for me. So I was really excited about that. But there were just moments in those first three movies. The last one, The Age of Extinction. Oh my God, that movie is so great to watch. I mean, my interpretation, you know, I mean, the way that I come at it is that we are the Transformers. So I'm Optimus Prime when I'm watching that film. And all the stupid, nonsensical, chaotic, like pointless stuff that's happening on the human level that everyone criticizes the movies for, like for being racist, for celebrating the patriarchy, for like all of these things is just already hindsight for me. Like when I'm watching it, I'm like, yeah, that's human ego and id and all of those things. It's like a nightmare. You know, you're watching, you're like, this is literally a nightmare. This makes no sense. But the film is just so beautiful and self-aware in that it literally asks you more than once, time and time again, to find treasure amongst the junk. Like that is the line that Marky Mark uses to convince Optimus to continue fighting on the side of the humans. And also sort of how Optimus ends up getting refound to begin with. So it
okay.
was really good.
Real quick.
And there was, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, in Valis, Philip K. Dick has this goes on this tangent about finding quote unquote God again, whatever you'd call that. It's such a loaded term. It doesn't even, let's just put that aside. Yeah. But he's saying you can find that quintessence, whatever you want to call it, in even like a pile of trash. So he was like God to a, a piece of garbage in a sense. And he's like, you know, when you really meditate on the world, you can find meaning in the shittiest things. Even Transformers, which Michael Bay is a shit director, and the culture surrounding it is shit, but there's something there.
So what is that then? Is that the writers just being tapped into the same kind of like bank of knowledge that we are and saying that? Because I mean, that was really fucking trippy to be in the theater and hearing it more than once, not just once, but at least three times throughout the movie, they say, find treasure amongst the junk. Like that is the line.
Yeah.
I was just so blown away. And I mean, the first, like, I think I've mentioned this before, but even it was like smacked you right in the face with the synchronicity. Like the Marky Mark's assistant is this sort of like Judas type character that ends up selling out the fact that they have uncovered a transformer because whatever. And anyway, he's driving this like mini Cooper that has license plate 0428, and he's wearing like a surfing shirt always until he dies, which is instantaneously. But also that's just a metaphor for enlightenment. And the very first thing that Optimus does when he reanimates is knock this non-believer upside the head so that he has this huge red welt in the middle of his forehead. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh shit, I get it. Okay, it's fine. I'm just like, I was sitting, it was me and then an entire row of teenage boys in the back, plus my husband in the back of the theater. And I was just sitting there with mouth agape, like, is anyone else watching this film with me? Why is no one else levitating out of their seat? I couldn't breathe. It was so good. It was just so good. And then all of my thoughts about how the first three movies reminded me of The Matrix, like if the Decepticons had come in and used human beings for energy, that's sort of what The Matrix trilogy would have started from. It was like more of that imagery in the fourth Age of Extinction film, even to the point where it was like crashing through sort of buildings. It's just like some of the scenes were exactly the same. And I was like, I can't. You know, it's 3 hours long, first of all. And I walked out vibrating so hard. Like, I think the last time I was vibrating that hard was from seeing The Matrix in the theater. I was so excited. And I know that's like a very personal thing, but there was a lot of other stuff going on that I couldn't believe no one was talking about. It's like when you walked out of my experience of walking out of the theater seeing The Matrix, everyone was talking about the special effects and I felt like a bomb had gone off in my head, you know, and I was like, wait a second, this is The Matrix. Whoa, I get all these things now. It's like the perfect cinematic Plato's cave. I love The Matrix. Such a good movie.
So when you guys talk about this idea of finding this quintessence among the junk. I mean, this is an alchemical idea. This is a Masonic idea, right? Like the Masons say, the cornerstone is the stone that the builders rejected. The same stone that is rejected is the cornerstone of the entire building process. So it's sort of like the thing that you thought was trash is actually your most valuable thing. You know, this is it's a sort of really common idea, and
and that whole idea of sort of secrets hiding in plain sight, just in general, like the thing that you're going to most easily overlook, the trash, is going to be the thing that is going to give you the clue or set you in place, or I don't know. It's good stuff.
I'm really not a pop culture person. Prejudgment. When I found the same community, I had some real issues with like sitting around watching movies, and I'm like, these movies suck. I don't want to watch these movies. I don't care if they sink. I don't care if whatever.
Yeah.
And every now and then, it's like, oh, okay, I get it. Right. You know, it's like, yeah, it's because it's so bad and it's so blatant and it's so undeniable that you're like, okay, fine, I get it. You know, where if it just sort of finds you in that right place where maybe you let your guard down or whatever it is. It's like, all right, whatever, it's a piece of crap movie. I'm not gonna I'm not going to overanalyze it, and then someone's like, oh, no, there it is. It's hiding in plain sight, as you say. So this was, I'm glad that I'm able to admit right off the bat that I had a really hard time with that in the beginning, but it's undeniable.
And I lucked out because it's not like I was even, I mean, when I found Sync, that's why I was sort of I wasn't really questioning my place. It was just like, I wasn't mining through movies. I wasn't looking at all of that pop culture side of stuff. I was just seeing it happen and unravel in a very, in my life, in my everyday life. So I stumbled upon Transformers. It's not like I was like mining through and watching a bunch of stuff, but it was just the first thing that popped out at me. I got lucky. And it is really beautiful in a way because movies and music. I mean, what's so beautiful about them is that they condense down the totality of human experience and knowledge into such a short amount of time. I mean, the way that poetry does, the way that great novels do, fiction or nonfiction. It's like, it's literally like the scene when Neo wakes up and learns about the Matrix and then downloads all the things into his brain. I mean, that's what movies and books and music and stuff and art can do for us. It can hold all of that philosophy and thought and emotion in one brushstroke or one scene of a movie or something. I don't know.
Can you tell us what we're missing here? What is the Matrix? What is the Transformers? Because there actually is a Matrix in the Transformers, right?
There is! There's the Autobot Matrix, and it's only a thing that the Autobots have. It's not a thing that the Decepticons have. It's really funny because the evolution of Transformers is that they started off as two races of robots. One, the Quintessence, developed as military defense, and that they evolved into the Decepticons. And then the other were entertainment bots, essentially, commercial entertainment bots. And they, the very first, it was the commercial bots that developed the ability to transform and engage. And then everything that the Decepticons ever did was a mimicry of that first transformation. And then also a corruption of it. Like, you know, I mean, the Decepticons have all the cool weapons and they have all the like massive, cooler abilities, but they don't have the ability to tap into the source directly and find new ways of transforming, which I think is really beautiful when we found out in the original animated film, when Optimus Prime dies, he reveals to everyone, because I think there's only ever been like three primes since the creation of all of them or something. And he reveals to everyone that inside his heart, the thing that makes him a prime is that he holds the Autobot Matrix, which is like basically the soul of all creative consciousness, and that it has to pass from one sort of leader to the next. And no one can tap into it but the Autobots. I think that's really lovely.
All right.
Which reminded me of the Unimatrix Zero thing from Next Generation too.
Yeah.
I mean, from Voyager.
All right, you're blowing my mind in a lot of ways. So I can't go to that tangent I want to, but
do
I'll
it.
Just start summarizing as best I can before we get on to something different. So, okay. All right, quintessence, your preoccupation with that is interesting and coincides with my own preoccupation with ether. I mentioned that earlier. So we're talking about space, like space-time. Mm-hmm. That's another term for ether. And you could say that everything erupts from it. The modern-day creation myth is the Big Bang. So erupted from the quintessence, from the ether, from this Higgs field, whatever they want to call it. And so foundationally, that's what's there.
Yeah.
And when you look at certain theories about psychedelic experience, psychic experience, revelation, something like what Philip K. Dick probably went through, any shaman, they're tapping into just a deeper level of reality.
Yeah.
So what's actually there, and even when someone's interacting in that level, there's, I'm forgetting what tradition this comes out of, but there's like the white brotherhood that exists beyond the veil that are like in the quintessence. So you could call them the quintessence if you want to. And so when certain people have near-death experience, they are quote-unquote judged by these things. by this white brotherhood, and in more beyond near death, when you're not near death and they're just in revelatory experience, people have still interacted with these things, these judges, these quintessential judges. And so it has grounding. I mean, it goes even deeper, you know, if you want to get really spooky about it.
Well, that's, I mean, it doesn't, it's never spooky. It's always just fun.
Can I right there, just what I have to jump in is just to put out a sort of disclaimer on that, is to say, there are people who use that idea of this white brotherhood as a, there is within esoteric and magic circles, there is a very strong, like, white power
Subsect.
Yes, and they use this idea of a white brotherhood, and I just want to...
Doesn't at all surprise me, because, again, it's people being too literal.
Right, and I just sort of want to point out here that if for anyone listening... No one, and I strongly
doubt.
That's
not what we're talking about.
That's not what we're at. So let's just throw that disclaimer out there. So
yeah,
please go on. But I just felt like I wanted to.
All words, and all things are symbolic, not literal. So yeah, I feel you on that.
I can't believe what you said to me last night. We were alone. You threw your hands up, baby. You gave up. You gave up. I can't believe how you looked at me with your James Dean glossy eyes, in your tight jeans, with your long hair, and your cigar. Could we fix you if you broke? And did your drunk line just a joke? I'll never talk again. Oh boy, you've left me speechless. You've left me speechless, so speechless. And I'll never love again. Oh, friend, you've left me speechless. You've left me speechless, so speechless. I can't believe how you slurred at me with your half-wide broken jaw. You popped my heart seams, all my bubble dreams. I can't believe how you looked at me with your Johnny Walker eyes. He's gonna get you, and after he's through, there's gonna be no love. And I know that it's a complicated, but I'm a loser in love. So baby, raise a glass to mend all the broken hearts of all my friends. I'll never talk again. Oh boy, you've left me speechless. You've left me speechless. Left me speechless, so speechless. Would you give it all up? Could I give it all up for you? And after all the boys and the girls that we've been through, would you give it all up? give a promise, boy, to you. That I'll never talk again, oh. And I'll never love again, oh. Doug Morris and Jimmy Iovine, everybody. Why are you so speechless? Oh, oh.